This is a One Voice podcast.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Jake Hawley, and you are listening to the third ever episode of the One Voice podcast. Today, I'm joined by someone I consider a brother in arms. He's a fellow photographer, and he has a lot of eyes on his work, and I can't wait to chat with him. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Gregory. I'm originally from Toronto, Canada. I moved to the West Coast to enjoy West Coast part of life.
Fabulous. That's actually, that's funny because I also moved from Ontario. We have a lot in common. We both lived in Ontario. We both are photographers. We're both ridiculously good looking. So we're going to try to find some things that we might not know about each other. And I'll start you off the question. It's a little hard one. It might be a thinker, but what is your favorite color?
My favorite color is yellow.
Yellow.
It's the color of spring. It's the color of daffodils. It's the color to beat cancer. I've lost some family members to cancer. So yellow is my color.
Yellow is not one you hear very often. So I'm glad that's your favorite color. All right. So you said you moved from Toronto. What brought you to the West Coast?
Well, I worked in Toronto and New York and back in Toronto. And I've had a lot of friends of mine that moved west during my career and always told me, you know, you got to come west, Greg. You're going to love it out west. And me and my wife got to a point in our lives where we decided, you know what, why don't we just head west and see what it's like.
Right on. All right, so you were a photographer in Toronto before you moved here.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning. Where did you start with photography? How did you get into this crazy lifestyle we live?
I started photography way back. It all started in high school. I went to Martin Grove Collegiate High School in Etobicoke. And my art teacher at the time, Mr. Tchaikovsky, came up with an idea to get us to change mediums. I was probably an acrylic painter and watercolor painter. So to just mix stuff around for us, he wanted us to change disciplines. And we had to pick a discipline out of a hat, and I ended up getting metal sculpture, which I hated. I just did like welding and all that kind of stuff. So I read in the library in regards to art, photography as an art form, and namely, I read about Dan Arbus, and I pitched it to him, and he told me, well, you write me 800 words, and I'll see if I consider it, and which, you know, I started researching Edward Weston, Ernst Haas, and again, Dan Arbus, he said, okay, go for it, and that's how it all started for me. I took my dad's camera, took out the Time Life books in the library, I read through them, developed my first roll of film. I borrowed everything from my Uncle Albert because he liked doing analog photography. And I was so excited when I processed my first roll of film. Actually, it didn't come out too good, but I actually saw some images on it. And that for me was like an epiphany moment as far as artistic career goes, because this is something now that I can you know, put together in my head subconsciously or consciously, and within a fraction of a second it's on film, and then I get to actually create it again by developing it. And it was such a great moment for me when I first saw my first negative in my hands.
That's really cool. I couldn't imagine. I think about this a lot, actually, how spoiled I am as a photographer, because I live in the digital era where you put everything on a card, you go home, it's on your computer in 5 minutes. I could not imagine waiting a whole week or longer just to have film developed. What's that like?
Well, it wasn't a week, because I did it as soon as I could.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
We didn't get that instant gratification, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But what was really cool about it is, I mean, you took the photo and you had, until you actually developed it, it would brew in your head. And when you actually did finally end up printing it, you would see how sometimes it was a little different, how you imagined it. What I found really exciting about it is, even though you did take the photograph, and technically it's known as being in its latent state when it's not developed, your imagination's still going. It's still creating in your head what you saw. And
okay,
you come up with one interpretation, but the film captures exactly what you caught, what you actually photographed. And sometimes it's very close, it's very similar. Sometimes it's not,
mm-hmm,
whether you underexpose it or overexpose it, whatever. But the final, what you achieved, sometimes is so rewarding.
I can imagine, yeah. How did you find, like, I'm assuming, so you started out doing film and roll of film and stuff like that, and you're shooting digital, yeah, now, right?
Well, I'm one of the, I mean, I've been doing it long enough to actually start from the, like, film era, so to speak. Yeah. Go through the entire transition to digital now. And back in the day when it all started, which was late 80s, early 90s, I went from shooting film for an ad agency I worked at to going to digital. And digital back then was not like you have here. I mean, you're talking 2 megapixels if you were lucky.
Yeah, I think I still have a 2 megapixel.
The back would scan like a document scanner. So if you were doing fashion, let's say, the models couldn't move until the scan was complete. So it's kind of really, really primitive at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But to see where it is now is pretty amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was actually going to ask how you found the transition from film to digital.
It's professionally, it's I mean, a lot of agencies, a lot of stockies still take film. So it's in a way it's a matter of choice. It depends on what work you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. If it's speculative work that you're doing, you can still shoot film. And that's why you're kind of seeing this resurgence of film.
I've noticed that, yeah.
Like slide film's back. Film never went away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an easier way to get the product done or the final piece done and more cost effective.
Okay.
But if you do have the option where you can still shoot film, you know, film's gladly accepted. It's a different look. And like I said, you don't get that self, that instant gratification, but you got to think more on your approach. And back in the film days, there was a rule. Everything was done through the camera. And I still take that approach.
That's good.
The younger generations tend to not take that approach and go more into post-production.
Yeah, no, it's a different culture now.
But when you're doing it for a client or whatever, going into post-production costs more money.
Yeah.
So again, you still got to have that school of thought to do it in the camera as much as you can. And most digital cameras today will facilitate that. You get as close to a completed image in your camera and get small amounts of post.
For sure. So anyone who's new to photography, take notes there. You want to take that advice and apply it and save yourself some time and your clients money. So you started with photography, and then what avenues did you take into that? So people I know are, you know, they're shooting weddings. I shot music back home. There's products. What kind of stuff did you
work on? At the beginning, I shot everything.
Everything.
Everything. From local bands to aspiring models at the time, and anything I can do, I would photograph. If someone needed furniture photographed, I'd volunteer to do it.
Yeah, I've done that.
And whatever I could, you know, get my hands on to photograph. And a lot of times it didn't work, like it wouldn't work out because it was the first time doing it. Mm-hmm. And you either assume it's done one way and then technically you find out it's not done that way, it should be done this way. But I've always told people that I photographed that if it didn't come out right away, like it didn't come out, I got to do it again. And they were fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that when you're new at it, that, you know, you're inexperienced. And part of getting experience is actually correcting the mistakes you make immediately, letting the people that you feel that you're working for immediately know that you made a mistake or the film got lost. Don't make excuses.
Yeah.
Just tell them and then redo it and everyone's happy.
Okay, cool. So you said you shot music. We're both from Ontario. Did you happen to shoot anyone that I might know?
You might. Oh, man, in high school, the Spoons. I don't know if you know the Spoons.
I have heard of the
Spoons. The 80s, they played my high school, and I remember shooting them. It was pretty cool.
Right on.
And I shot it on Ektachrome film, and then on Kodachrome. I had a couple of rolls on Kodachrome film, 64, which is really slow by today's standards of ISO sensitivity.
Yeah.
But the results came out so great. Like, I still have some of those. And they don't make Kodachrome anymore, it kind of excited me even more. It's like a trap. You get addicted.
Oh, absolutely.
And you just want to, you know, carry on. I was supposed to major in architecture. I changed it, took a year off, and went into photography. Mm-hmm. My parents weren't too happy about that, but I was a little apprehensive at first, too, when you're thinking about it. But then when the course started and meeting other people with the same passion, and then, you know, teachers that had the same passion, kind of ignited even more within me. So I kept pursuing it.
I know what you mean about the, like, it's addicting. There's a, especially with music photography, I found there's a certain rush when you get that perfect shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great feeling when you nail it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, it's hard. It's so many elements have to come together. And it's not like when you're painting. I mean, the main difference for me was whether I have to photograph it instantly. It right in front of my eyes. So I got to compose it. I got to value lighting, everything. Mm-hmm. Make my shutter speed decision, everything, instantaneously to capture that.
Yeah.
In painting, I could always change it.
That's true.
I could go back and go, I don't like that blue. Yeah, I'm going to change that.
Color over that.
I can't change it. And that's what really, really, really hooked me to it. It's like a game for me. It's in a way like hunting, you know. You got to make sure all the elements are correct before you hit that trip, that shutter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the film days, you hope for the best until it got developed. Now, you know, you'll see it instantly. But even that, I mean, I tend to not use the back screen at all when I'm photographing. It's too much of a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once on an assignment, years ago, when President George Bush II went to Buffalo, I went to photograph this event, and I kept looking at my back monitor, and another photographer just tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Don't look at that. You can look at that later. Look what's in front of you."
Mm-hmm.
That's the story.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that.
I like that a lot. When it comes to music specifically, you said it's like a hunt, kind of like a challenge, right? My favorite thing to do shooting music is try to get all the band members in the frame in the perfect pose without any sort of blocking. It's like no mic stands in the way, you know, their instruments aren't blocking their face or anything like that. Do you have any similar challenges?
When I do bands, I like to get them in their moment. I mean, I want to capture that energy. I don't like shooting them when they first get on the stage. I like them when they're on their first 40 minutes in. I mean, they're sweating. They're into it. They get into it too. Music, I mean, is addictive, and musicians get into their own groove, and that's when it starts happening. And that's the moments I try to capture. I mean, if they're sweating there, I mean, they get into it with the crowd.
Yeah, like in their moment.
And that's what I try to capture. I want to capture that energy
right
more than anything.
So that music was, you don't shoot music anymore.
I don't do it anymore. I used to do it for the newspapers, whoever came in town. I mean, you know, go to the ACC and take a few shots of this at Bruce Springsteen or whatever.
Mm,
and it's all orchestrated. You get your three songs and then you got to go.
Yeah.
But I remember when I had to do Bruce at the Sky Dome, you know, you get three songs. You got, well, I want to, Bruce Springsteen is energy, is... If you ever go to his concert, it's, how can I say it? It's like an event. It's like running a track meet. You come out of there sweaty. You come out of there pumped. And that's what I wanted. So they actually let me wait another 20 minutes.
Nice.
They started getting into his own show, right? And that was pretty rewarding.
Cool. So you've come a long way since then. I've done some research and I've seen that you've won a lot of awards and you've been in a lot of galleries. Which of these do you think are your most proud moments?
And that's a hard one. I mean, I guess the galleries are really good. I mean, my first time ever showing my work was at Indigo Books at the Manulife Center during the Contact 2000 Photography Festival. That was the first time I ever exhibited my work publicly in a solo show.
Mm-hmm.
Through the Contact venue, which was great. It's great for photographers. It was a hard moment leaving, and after you hang them, you don't sleep that first night because it's like everything that you've photographed, that you love, that you honestly love and did it with your heart is up on that wall. And the next morning, are people going to like it?
Mm-hmm. No, I can imagine. It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You don't sleep that night, but it all worked out great. I mean, the next day, I sold pieces like quickly, and it wasn't just that. It was the stories that people were telling me. The show was on Greece, and I did all these Cibachrome prints of the Greek islands in color. And but some of the stories of, especially one individual in the west island of Santorini, the point called Ia, is a fantastic point with these beautiful 600-foot like cliff rocks. And he said, you know, and he kept looking at it. I go, well, you really like that? He goes, well, that's where I met my wife. We were both, we traveled separately, but we both met there.
Right on.
And we ended up getting married. We have four kids. And that's, that this image just brings it all back to me. And that to me is very satisfying because photography is a vehicle of communication. Absolutely. First and foremost. And if you can get an emotional response from an individual looking at it, be it a memory, if you can make them laugh, cry, but memories are really special to me because it's like if you ever walked into a bakery and you smell bread, and then 20 years later you walk into a bakery in another country and smell bread, that immediate memory of the first time you did it comes it's back. It's a lot, like you can feel it. And that to me is really important when your photograph can communicate that strongly to an individual. Then you succeeded.
And that's why I think photography is like, it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere anytime soon as an art form because it's a communicator.
Well, it's probably the best communicator because if you look at it now, compared to when it first started out, I mean, web streaming, I mean, it's everywhere. Instagram, I mean, Facebook, everything's driven by visual media. And it is the quickest and way to get a point across. There was a saying, you know, back in the day, a picture's worth 1,000 words, which is true. Yeah. I mean, if you do it right and you want to send a message to somebody or a group or a government, or a photograph is the best way to do it. It's a very powerful way of doing it. I mean, there's a famous photo of Kim Phuc, the Vietnamese girl in 1970s that changed the war, that was shot by Nick Ut, that changed the pattern of the Vietnam War.
I'm not sure if I've seen that one.
And she lives in Ajax, Ontario, but it's a fantastic story. The one photo completely brought a war to an end.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. Yeah. And even today, what you're seeing today with the Black Lives Matter, I mean, there's some great photography out there that actually bring it to you. I mean, you can actually feel it. I mean, feel the frustration, feel what society's going through right now.
Yeah, I've seen some of those shots. And really
that's the power of photography.
Yeah. So we talked about your galleries and the awards you've won. So what are you up to today? What are you working on now?
Well, today I'm working on a couple of projects, but I'm not going to disclose what the projects are right now, but I'm working on two themes. I usually work on narratives now, and I'll try to tell a story through each narrative that I have, and hopefully produce a book out of it. There's two projects that I'm working on right now. One is in black and white, and the other one's going to be in color. So I'll just throw those two bits out right now. I do work a lot in black and white.
I've seen that, yeah. That's the stuff I've seen has been a lot of noir-type photography.
Yeah, because I find black and white to be a stronger image because it removes the color, but it makes the viewer's imagination put the feeling into it and assemble it to their point of view. It's like the foundation of a structure.
Mm-hmm.
The structure is one part of it, but the black and white is its core essence. And usually, a lot of people say they find them more powerful than the color themselves, because we're so used to seeing color. But our brain isn't so used to seeing black and white, especially today. So there's always a pause when a black and white photo is put in front of you. You need that second or two to go, okay, it's a black and white photo, and what color is this shirt? All these questions come up. It could be the same, it could be around the corner from where you live, yet it's going to look different. And I love that power. I love that effect.
I know what you mean. I shot a music festival a couple of years ago, and, you know, festivals are always lights and, you know, in your face. And a lot of my photos from that event came out, like, very vibrant and stuff like that. But I flipped the switch on one of the shots. Again, full band, all four members, perfect blocking. And instead of color correction, I just turned off the color, black and white. And I think it was my best photo from that event.
Yeah, it's pretty cool when that happens, eh?
Really cool.
Yeah, it's just, it makes you makes the viewers think more about what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is really important. It's like the soul of the photo in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you're stripping away everything that doesn't really matter.
It's like you're exposing
leaving,
it.
You're leaving what the substance is, what really counts.
Absolutely. That's a good way of thinking about it. So you do fine art photography.
I do fine art photography now. And I don't even, you know, consider it fine art photography. I get to photograph now what I want to photograph, rather than what an art director would tell me to do or a managing editor would tell me to get.
That's a good feeling. It must be.
That's good. A great feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You're a bit more free. And what's really great about it is when you're hired to do like a job for an assignment or a client, they're going to get it anyways. They're going to like it. But the feeling of doing something completely on your own, creatively, either consciously or subconsciously, and then someone appreciating it or actually even buying it,
mm-hmm.
is a completely different feeling. It's you did everything. It wasn't an art director's idea. It wasn't a pitched narrative from a managing editor. It's all you. You've come up with the concept. You've come up with the composition,
mm-hmm.
and you executed it, and you know, it made a difference to somebody.
Yeah, it's like, so instead of like somebody buying a corporate product of a photograph, it's like they're buying kind of like a piece of you, in a sense, right?
They are, because, like I said, you either get told, you know, we want this, I want a red flower on a white tablecloth by a blue dish, and, you know, that's what you're paid to do.
That sounds very specific. Did you
It's very specific, yeah. Well, you always get these specific things, you know. Not that, you know, simple, but they are specific,
mm-hmm.
right? Either for a catalog or for a product ad, it's very specific. Or you'll have a managing editor going, you know, the skate park open, get three kids skating, get one jumping, and get the group picture.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of told, basically, this is what's expected. When you're on your own out there, I never go out with, today I'm going to photograph, you know, birds. I go out there like a 12-year-old kid. First time out in a new city, and that's how I treat what I do. It's a new day, it's a new place for me, and I'm going to look at what interests me. It gets my curiosity going, and usually leads me to other things,
mm-hmm.
like a person that I've never met. I'm going to start talking to them. Basically, I feel like I'm a tourist sometimes in my own city, but... it gives me a totally different canvas to work with, rather than being structured. Well, you know, Bay Street, there's Boulder Cement or whatever. You know, the legislature, you know, has the horse. I go complete. I'm not looking for that.
I gotcha.
I'm looking for what gets my attention, and that's what I focus on. If there's a story to tell, I'm going to try and tell it with a photograph. It's that simple.
Nice. So what was the last thing that... last time you went out on a walk to take photos, what was the last thing that got your attention?
I just did it right now.
Oh, yeah?
At the church on Quadra there. Quadra
okay.
And is that, I don't know the name of the church, but I did see the flag there.
Okay.
In the rainbow colors, love is love. I took a photo of that.
That's really cool, especially on a church.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how quickly I see it now. And, you know, you can easily put that on Instagram. But it tells a story. I mean, it's at a, you know, and that's what I want to do. I want to continue being a storyteller, but on my own terms. So whether you call it fine art, or you know, documentary photography, it really doesn't matter. I don't really pigeonhole them into categories.
Okay.
And I don't work that way. How it's accepted, it's accepted. But to me, the gratification to me is if it sends a response, it sends a message, and it evokes a feeling in an individual. That to me is a reward.
Great answer. I'm going to go check out that church. So on your way here, you
just on Quadra, and I think it's Blanchard?
Blend, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go check that out right after.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll get my own shot that we can compare later.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask a few questions for the photographers listening out there. I think there's a few things that every photographer can relate to.
Sure.
So what was the pinnacle moment? I feel like every photographer has a moment when they either look at a picture or look at a landscape or something like that, and they think, yeah, I want to do this for a long time. What was that moment for you?
The moment for me, I guess, would be, that's a hard one. I used to study Edward Weston. I went to Diane Arbus, but I studied a lot of Edward Weston. And he did a shot of a Nautilus shell. That to me is to this day brilliant. The symmetry of the composition, the lighting in this, and you got to remember this is 1930s. Mm-hmm. He contact printed everything. It comes to life. It's just a shell, but there's more to it than that when you look at it. The dimension in it is special. And to me, it's an inanimate object that becomes animated in your imagination. Mm-hmm. That to me is really powerful, and that's what started me going. I mean, if you're not familiar with Edward Weston, he and Ansel Adams did a lot of stuff at Yosemite. But Edward's pretty well like the father, as they say, of West Coast photography and maybe modern contemporary photography. Mm-hmm. And he did his portraits and stuff. He didn't make a lot of money, but he didn't make it for the money. He did it to make it as a statement. I mean, his model was art should be affordable to everybody. So he would charge like $15 for a print.
That's amazing.
So, you know, everyone should be able to afford art, which I kind of, you know, I really admired that. But I just admired his work ethic and his vision. His vision was, it's amazing.
Edward Weston.
Edward Weston. And okay. He really influenced Ansel Adams a lot. And, I mean, these are kind of like the fathers of modern-day contemporary, or if you want to call it fine art photography. But they didn't see themselves as fine art photographers at the time. They were recording what was in front of them as more accurately as they possibly could. And back then, it was like either orthochromatic film and then panchromatic film came out. The difference would be orthochromatic didn't see the red color spectrum. Mm. Then panchromatic did. And there's a moment in Edward Weston's day books, which are his diary, when silver gelatin paper from England came, and they were doing palladium and platinum prints, mm-hmm. and he printed one of his negatives on this fiber-based silver gelatin print, and he goes, "Oh my God, look at all these tones! I got to reprint everything." And till the day he passed away, he was trying to reprint everything because he couldn't believe the tonality he was seeing. So that's pretty, inspiring.
It's a way to go out, printing all your
photos. Pretty way to go out, yeah. I mean, his prints are worth a lot of money now, but back in the day, he wasn't doing it for that. He was doing it for self-satisfaction. And for a lot of photographers out there that are aspiring, do it for yourself first. Don't worry about the money. Do it for yourself. Try to get a style. I mean, I was fortunate in my career to get to learn these things and be instructed in that way to get a style. And my black and white has a style. It's a distinct style, and that's gonna help you in this massive world of billions of photographs that are taken yearly. Separate yourself from everyone else.
It's a great piece of advice.
You'll have your own look. You'll have your own style, and that'll help you move forward.
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun, part of the journey is, you know, finding what your style is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it takes years. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not something. It's not the camera that's going to do it for you. It's going to be you, and your vision and your consistency, and then you got to believe in yourself. And like I said, do it for yourself, and things work out.
I'm glad you said that it's not the camera that does it for you, because the camera is a tool, a very expensive tool, albeit, but it's just a tool, you know?
It's a tool. People go, what's your favorite camera? I really don't have a favorite camera. It's like asking a painter, what's your favorite brush?
True. Or asking tools. A chef, what's your favorite knife?
They're tools, and you might have more than one tool. But the thing is, when you use these tools, Each one is consistent to your style, to your vision. And that's the key. I mean, I have lenses that I bought. I mean, ones from 1961.
Wow.
That I won't get rid of because the rendering it gives me is so unique and apt for my style that it would be like giving my left eye away. I can't do it. And I don't care how old the camera is. It doesn't really matter because once it's printed, the result for me is the print. Not so much the file, the actual physical print.
I know what you mean. There is a very good gratification to having a photo printed. Like for me, I love printing on a canvas and having that in my hands in front of me that I can put on my wall. That's the end goal, I think, for me.
Well, that should be the end goal.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, like keeping it online is one thing, but now it's a physical. It's actually something physical in front of you.
Tangible. It means something more.
And it means exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm glad we're talking about gear because that was actually part of my next question. I think that a lot of photographers, whether they admit it or not, they get excited when a piece of gear falls in their hands. Whether they're gonna like what doesn't matter if it's new, if it's old. I think holding a piece of gear is exciting. So I want to talk about what did you start out with? What camera did you start with? What are you using now? And what did you use in between?
Jeez, I started off with a 1964 Zeiss Contaflex, which was the camera I borrowed, like I stated earlier, when I tried photography.
My dad
actually
from
gave
Apple,
it to
right?
me. He actually gave it to me.
Wow,
after.
Lucky.
And I started playing with this thing, which today is like a dinosaur. But it mean it did. It was a leaf shutter in it. It did what you know. It didn't have interchangeable lenses. It had interchangeable. How can I say it? Add-ons mm-hmm. to make it wide angle and make it telephoto.
Okay.
And it did that. It. I mean, I love the photos that it was taking. It's not that it's taking the photos. I'm taking the photos.
You're taking the photo.
But it freed me from thinking about the mechanics of it and actually concentrating on what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And. And my next one was a Pentax K1000. That one I saved my pennies for my summer job to buy it. I still remember the day that I bought it.
Yeah.
I rode my bike down to get this camera. Paid $170 with tax for it back then.
Wow. I mean, back then,
and
it makes sense. Now it's a steal.
Yeah, well, I rode back. I mean, I put a roll of film through it, and I just kept shooting film and night walks, whatever occasion. I mean, I take the subway downtown to shoot some stuff. It was a 50mm lens, F2, but it kind of honed me on into my next piece of gear.
Yeah.
Then I got to a point where, when I started doing it professionally, it's all kinds of gear.
Yeah, true.
It's you walk into studio, sometimes you got to use their gear. I mean, but it's your style that differentiates you, right? It makes it different. Cameras I use today, I mean, I use everything, really. I mean, today I'm using an Olympus Pentax. I mean, 2 days ago I shot with a Leica. I mean, I shoot a lot with my Hasselblad film, CM 500. It's still the one I use the most for film is my Hasselblad.
I can picture a lot of people listening right now just kind of like writing a list. Okay, Hasselblad, Pentax, Leica, okay, what next?
I mean, they're all great. I mean, today, every camera is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
From a Canon to a Nikon to... They all achieve what you want them to do.
Yeah, and there's just so many different functions nowadays for different types of photography. Like we got, DSLR cameras, we got underwater cameras, GoPros and stuff like that, drones. There's so much more than what there used to be.
Oh, and then sensor sizes. And
sensor sizes and 4K, 8K, all
that.
But
at the end of the day, it's the print for me that counts.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't matter. The sensor size really doesn't matter to me anymore or the 4K or whatever. I don't even shoot 4K, so it wouldn't matter to me. What matters to me is the final product that I get with it. It's consistent. And I don't change cameras that often because I'm more, if it's doing what I want it to do, then I'm going to hang on to it. I will try new cameras just for the, and what photographer is like new gear in his hands?
Exactly.
Every day. I mean, yeah. Every hour, if you can give me a piece to play with, I'll play with it.
I'll do it, yeah.
But at the end of the day, what am I going to actually use on a job? That's the question. Or what am I going to use when I'm out working? I'm going to work with the one that I'm most comfortable with because it's a tool.
of course.
And for me, it's got to be invisible. It's something that I don't have to worry about setting something or work, that lets me concentrate on my subject and my composition and my work more than itself. Once it starts distracting me, then it's not working for me, because now it's becoming a distraction. That's basically how I judge my gear. I mean, if it's easy to use, works with my workflow, and gives me the results that I want consistently, I'll have it for life.
I'm going to pay extra attention on my next shoot now, because if my camera's distracting me, I'm going to look at it and be like, you need to stop distracting me, or I'll replace you.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that's what you should do. I mean, I always recommend people always ask me, you know, I always ask them, what gear should I use? Well, it's not what you should use. What do you feel good using?
Yeah, true. You know, nobody has that answer, you know?
I mean, 50 years ago, there was, like, not too many cameras around. Now there's an infinite amount, like you just said.
Yeah.
What works for you? Find it and use it, and you're going to use it for life.
Yeah, also, what can you afford? That's a big factor.
Today, I mean, it's... people always ask me that question. It's not about the price of the gear.
No.
It's what it can do and what you can do with it. They all take fantastic pictures. Do you need some of the features or don't you need some of the features? That's the question you should be asking yourself. I mean, if you don't do video, why? Don't worry about the video part of it. The most important place to spend your money is on the glass, the lenses. Is where the money's at. The lens is the eye of the camera. You can buy a $10,000 camera, and then you're going to go buy a lens on eBay that you bought for $40.
It doesn't work.
And then you're going to blame the camera.
I almost made that mistake.
Not the lens, but it's the glass. Spend the money on the glass, and you'll reward yourself, because cameras will change every 6 months now, it seems.
It's true.
Every 6 months, it's true, it's a new model, but not the glass. When you have a great piece of a great lens, it'll stay with you forever. You'll always change the body, but it's that lens that gives you that your style, that rendering. And I just mentioned it earlier. I'm going to have a 1960 lens that I'll never get rid of.
This is a 60-year-old lens now, yeah.
Because you know, whatever body I put it in, I get that image, I get that style, I get that rendering that's unique. And it's a keeper.
I'm going to have to see if I can find one of those on eBay.
Maybe you will. Maybe you won't.
Hopefully. All right. So last question, and this is kind of a generic question. You kind of be given a lot of advice already, but if you could give one piece of advice, just one, to someone who's about to start photography or is very new to photography, what would that be?
You go at it with the utmost curiosity and open-mindedness, and don't put pressure on yourself. Shoot what you see and what you want to photograph. What makes you take that photograph? Ask yourself that question. Take that photograph and look at them after. And don't worry about messing up, because that's how you get better. You're supposed to mess up in composition. You'll never learn if you're perfect. Because, I mean, back in the film days, you'd have a roll of 36.
Mm-hmm.
And you were so happy when four of them were good. Like, finally, four out of roll, you know.
4 out of 36.
I bracketed, man. But now, I mean, some people get upset on their memory card will have, like, 300 pictures. I mean, oh, I blew three. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, three is great.
But it's not that. I mean, it's get out there and get the practice. It's the practice that makes you better.
I remember one time, I think it was at the same festival I mentioned earlier. It was a weekend festival. I had shot 11,000 photos over the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the camera I have is a really high shutter burst, and I am really spoiled with that. But I think out of that, maybe 86 photos turned out.
Wow,
yeah,
that's a lot of editing.
It's a lot of, like, no, crap, delete. Oh, that's good, delete. Yeah, that's great advice. No matter how many times I hear it, the you're supposed to make mistakes advice always hits home.
You got
to
make mistakes. Take the photo that, I mean, it hits you in your mind. I mean, it's consciously or subconsciously, it's going to come to you. Take that photo. You can do it today, because back in the day when I started, I had to get it. It was film. So I didn't have infinite amounts of... I didn't have 1,000 pictures on my memory card. I had 4 rolls of film with me, or 10 rolls of film for 360 pictures.
That's so nice.
Now you get an SD card. I mean, a 32 gigabyte card will put, depending on the camera, but you can put almost 2,000 images on. That's a lot of rolls of film.
That's a lot of rolls of film.
So think of it that way. Think of it, if this was film, how many rolls of film did you shoot? I mean, if you shot 11,000, that's a big bag of film.
That's a big bag of film and a big printing press.
That's right. Yeah. So look at it that way, and it'll start curbing what you're shooting. Think of it as rolls of film. Think of it, each time you take 36, that's one roll. 72, that's two rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, back in the day, we had to do sports with 36 roll film, and we'd shoot three rolls.
Because
they're not going to go through 100 rolls of a sporting event.
No.
They want the 1-2 pitches for the paper, for the edition. So you didn't shoot that many, but you shot correctly. It's all timing. I always recommend people take it off continuous, stick it on single.
I think I should, yeah.
And start practicing single and waiting for that moment. I mean, Henri Cartier-Bresson wrote a book, the whole thing, The Decisive Moment, where all these elements come together. And you take that one picture, puts it all together. He's correct in a way, because that's what you're actually waiting to happen, rather than taking a burst and hoping it happens. That's two different approaches to your photography. When you're taking a burst, you're hoping you're getting it, and then you're checking to see if you did.
And then missing what's happening.
But if you're timing it, you're going to get it.
That's
80%
good.
Of the time.
Very good point. I'm going to do that right after we're done here, is just put that back on single mode.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Gregory, thanks for coming out. Thanks for chatting with us. We went well over time, but I'm going to keep all of that because that was a blast.
Awesome. It was a really good time, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
Awesome. Well, you guys, we'll see you on the next episode.